Welcome to Bookwaves on Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Catherine Chung, whose first novel is titled Forgotten Country. Catherine Chung was born in Evanston, Illinois, studied mathematics, has an MFA from Cornell. She's lived in the United States, Korea, Germany, and France, and currently lives in Brooklyn.
I actually just moved to Chelsea last month.
This book has been getting quite a bit of play, and it's the story of a family who have come from Korea. They're in the United States, and for various reasons, they have to go back to Korea, which we'll talk about. But there aren't that many Korean-American writers out there, which means you're kind of forging your own path as Chang Rae Lee, Alexander Chi, and Nami Mori, but that's about it, right?
I think that there are a handful of other up-and-coming writers that are really exciting. Chris Lee just came out with a book, Matt Solicit. But yeah, there aren't so many of us. Especially growing up, there weren't very many of us.
Well, there are some elements of this book that are autobiographical and some that are not. It's about two sisters, but you have a brother, right?
Right. Yeah, I don't have a sister, and it's about a family that immigrated to America, but I was born here.
But your parents emigrated.
Right.
Was your brother also born here?
No, my brother was actually born in Seoul, and I was born just a few months after my parents moved here.
But as with the character of Janie in Forgotten Country, you did not speak English until you went to school, correct?
That's right. I learned English in kindergarten, actually. My parents only spoke Korean at home. But I think I started speaking English within that school year. So I learned how to read and write with all the other students. By the end of the year, I was at the same reading level, though I think it took me a while to get to the same speaking level.
And how long did it take your parents to learn English?
So the interesting thing is that my parents came to America speaking English. My dad was a professor. My mother majored in English at university. They just never spoke it to me. I ended up in school completely confused because there were all these people and none of them spoke Korean. And I didn't even know that was going to happen at the time because it was just nothing that we had ever spoken to each other. And then later I realized that my parents spoke English, just not me.
And you were a Buddhist and this was a Christian school?
That's also true. My parents sent me to a private Christian school, and so my sort of, I guess, immersion into the English language also involved praying for my family every day in the classroom because we were Buddhist heathens.
How did that make you feel? Did it make you feel like an outcast? Like Janie in the book?
I think it probably made me feel bewildered and confused and freaked out and like we were probably all going to hell.
At what point did you realize that it was just a religion clash?
You know, I don't know. I was really young at that time. I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, and so I don't know that I had realizations like that ever, but I was really worried about it for a long time. I used to pray at home every night because I actually believed in all of this stuff. So I used to pray at home every night that I could go to hell along with the rest of my family because I was really afraid that by believing in God at that time while I was in school that it would somehow separate me from my family. But then my parents took me out of that school, I think, when they realized how unhappy I was, and then I just ceased to think about it.
In talking about Forgotten Country, okay, your family, they always told stories, so somewhere in there was this idea of telling stories and writing. Before Forgotten Country, you've written short stories, though, right?
Yeah, I had written short stories, and before that, I had always kind of wanted to be a poet. So I'd been writing sort of my entire life. There had been writers sort of in my ancestry in Korea, which I had heard about growing up.
Did you go back to Korea prior to the research on this book?
Yeah, I went back to Korea every few years to visit family.
So you were kind of familiar with the country.
Yeah.
Korea has changed, which we'll get to in a moment, but let's first talk more about the origins of Forgotten Country, Catherine Chung. So you've written short stories. You want to write a novel. How did you go about determining what you were exactly going to write?
That was a messy, very long process. I just sort of stumbled into it blind and then walked through it blind for years. It took me about 5 years to write this book, and I think it was in the last year that I discovered what I was writing. And so I think I'm the kind of writer that just writes a whole bunch of stuff and then reads it over and figures out what I was trying to write about and then discards most of the stuff and then tries again.
Well, what was the stuff?
The book started out actually totally different. There are many storylines that have since been cut. There was a blind flying ghost monk. So if you've read the book, which you, I know you have, it doesn't actually make sense in the context of the book. I realized that he didn't really fit, and so he went. So the first 50 pages have always sort of been part of this novel. The rest of it, I threw out maybe 1,000 pages. But the opening scenes, I knew that there was a sister who had disappeared. I knew that there was this history of loss. I knew that the history of Korea would play in somehow. And then I knew that these folk tales were, because I kept writing them, I knew that they would have something to do with the book.
As it turns out, the book is really about a family's coping with the father having cancer. And that comes up early on, and it stays throughout the whole book, and it becomes the central motif of the book,
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah.
And everything else revolves around that. At what point did that emerge?
That actually emerged maybe 1 or 2 years in, fairly early on.
And how did the characters change? I mean, at the beginning, Janie seems very straightforward, the one who's writing this first person, and her sister Hannah is kind of a loose cannon.
Uh-huh.
But as the book develops, it turns out that Janie is herself the loose cannon, and I don't want to say an unreliable narrator, but she turns out to have more issues than we thought. How did that emerge?
I think that it actually happened very slowly in the writing process, and maybe that was one of the things that I realized sort of in the last year, which was that she is an unreliable narrator, that she can only tell us as much as she knows, and she can also kind of only tell us as much as she is willing to know. And so for me, writing this book was sort of an exploration of how much Janie, the main character, is willing to admit to herself and willing to sort of take on in terms of responsibility for everything that's been happening in her life, in the life of her family.
Well, her family is fairly stifling, as we learn, which is the reason why Hannah had to get out. Is that autobiographical?
No, actually, I wouldn't say that. I feel like my parents were actually super open-minded and encouraging of me in terms of exploring whatever I wanted to explore, even thinking about whatever I wanted to think about. But, you know, I think that I have experienced moments in which I felt stifled. I think that earlier moment we were talking about where we prayed for my family not to go to hell, you know, that was like a moment in which I was sort of encouraged or forced or what have you to think a certain way. And I've always reacted against that. And so that feeling of having to be a certain kind of person and feeling like you have to fit into a kind of category was something that I really wanted to talk about.
Did you have the issues that Janie had just being Asian and somehow being confused with any other Asian beside being Korean? Like being Chinese or something?
Oh, did people think I was Chinese?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Growing up, everybody thought I was either Chinese or Japanese. And, you know, what was really interesting was that every once in a while someone would say, well, are you from North Korea or South Korea? And when I was a kid, you know, when I was like 4 or 5, I had no idea. And so I would just randomly guess which side I was from. So I think that I was also confused.
Speaking of Korea, there is North and there is South Korea. We here don't know that much about either, except that South Korea was a very authoritarian regime, which plays a role in Forgotten Country, because that's why the parents had to leave.
Uh-huh.
When your parents left, was it that authoritarian, do you remember?
I mean, much more so than it is now. I mean, South Korea isn't really like that anymore. But I think when my parents left, there were, you know, student democratization movements. It was different back then, for sure, than it is now. It was less open, I think.
And when you go back now, what's it like?
Oh, when I go back now, it's just fun for me. I mean, one, I'm a visitor. Two, like, my entire extended family is there. And so going out and eating at all the new restaurants that I haven't eaten at yet, and going shopping in the market and walking in the mountains, you know, it's like home, sort of. It's a very beautiful country. There are mountains all around, and then it's a peninsula, so it's surrounded by the sea. And then the city of Seoul is cut by rivers, so it's very beautiful and surrounded by mountains.
Did you make it up to the DMZ?
Actually, no. I've never been to the DMZ. It's someplace that tourists go. I don't know if sort of people who live in Korea get up there. It's someplace that I actually want to go to. It's someplace that my relatives have never really wanted to take me.
Do they talk there about North Korea at all, or is that kind of like this blank spot in everybody's mind that they just don't want to think about it?
Oh, you know, they don't actually talk about it that much. I feel like we actually talk about it more here. Even, you know, when North Korea does something sort of big and alarming, I feel like we talk about it more here. I have a cousin who served in the military, and he would occasionally talk about North Korea because in the military they talk about it a lot. But otherwise, I've never really had very many conversations about it with Koreans.
Catherine Chung, there's a story in Forgotten Country about an aunt of Janie and Hannah's being abducted and disappearing into the North. This is based on something in your own family, right?
Yeah, the circumstances of that are similar to my father had a sister who was abducted to North Korea when she was in college and he was a young boy. The details in the book are almost entirely made up. The details of what happened to my father's sister are largely unknown. I've heard very little, which is probably why I was compelled to write about some fictional version of that happening. All we know is that she disappeared, actually, and the family suspects that she was abducted because that was something that happened back then and because a handful of girls were kidnapped around the time that my aunt disappeared. But beyond that, there's almost no information. She did write a letter, actually, when I was in high school or college to a cousin in China who told my family that this aunt was alive and had children and had gotten married. But the thing that's really curious about having communications from someone who lives in North Korea is that that's all censored and controlled by the government there, so you don't know if any of that information is actually true. We assume that she wrote it, but Marie Myung-ok Lee, who's actually another Korean-American writer, gave a talk on North Korea, and she said that her father had been receiving letters for years from his brother asking for money, and they found out years later that his brother had actually passed away. And so they had been getting these letters. So it's difficult to know when something is that controlled, what is true and what isn't true.
In an interview, you said the split in Korea is a very painful and constant wound, yet at the same time, they don't talk about it.
I think that they don't talk about it because it is a constant and painful wound, if that makes sense. It's like somebody who is ill who doesn't talk about their illness because it's always there.
Do you think that that on some level relates on an unconscious way to the idea of writing about someone with an illness?
Maybe. I think maybe writing about both things comes from a similar impulse, which is to try to lay bare something that is almost too painful to look at most of the time or to talk about.
You said in that same interview that maybe on a symbolic level, having two sisters at odds with one another has some kind of relationship to North Korea and South, or is that just kind of talk?
Well, I think it was something I held in my mind while I was writing
the book.
Was
it really?
Yeah, I think that North Korea and South Korea was something I had always wanted to talk about. And actually, the reason I thought of the whole sisters in general was because when I was growing up, my parents watched Korean dramas, which are actually getting more and more popular, I think, everywhere in the world. But I hated watching these Korean dramas. I should maybe not say that out loud, but I hated watching them because they always seemed to be about the same thing, and they were always about star-crossed lovers that came from uncertain origins. And so, you know, there was always the possibility that they might be related in some way. And I was just like, what is this? It's so preposterous. Why are we always watching these dramas about lovers who think that they might be, you know, like involved in incestuous love somehow? At some point, I think maybe when I was in college, I realized, oh, it's because in Korea, there is this underlying anxiety, I think, like when you haven't seen your family members, when, you know, a brother or sister might actually go unrecognized, or a cousin, because you haven't seen these people for an entire lifetime, then it makes sense that the country would put out these stories about siblings or about lovers who don't know if they're siblings, or, you know, just the general anxiety about not knowing your family or not knowing if who you love is the person you should love. So, you know, like, yeah, so like it was actually an actual idea that I had in my head when I was writing the book.
You're listening to an interview with Catherine Chung, whose novel is titled Forgotten Country. Why do you call it Forgotten Country?
So I was doing some research on, you know, Korean history, and I saw that the Korean War is often called the Forgotten War. And I think just that word forgotten triggered sort of a lot of thoughts. And I was looking for a title at the time. And I was thinking about how sort of amazing it is that something like a war can be forgotten, you know, after it's changed the courses of so many lives. And it also seemed to me true, not just that America has forgotten it, but that in a lot of ways, because South Koreans don't talk about North Korea, that war really has been forgotten. And then it made me think of all the things that have been forgotten. And I thought, wow, like, to forget the war means that you forget then that Korea was a united country and that it had a united history. And so it was that country that I was trying to write about, the country that was sort of like a whole united country before it had been broken apart, which is also the family.
The cancer story, did that mean you had to do extra research as that story came to the fore in the book?
What happened was that my father actually became ill pretty early on when I was writing the book. And so I think that was just a storyline that emerged because my own mind was so preoccupied with illness and a loss of that nature.
Was it cancer?
Yeah.
Is he alive now? Or?
No, he passed away.
So it's kind of the same story in some respects.
It's always such a hard question to answer, the whole, you know, is it the same story as your life? Because, no, it isn't. And at the same time, of course, it's about loss. I mean, of course, it's like I'm writing about loss because of my own loss.
At those points when the story is intersecting with your own life, does it become harder to write from Janie's perspective because she's different from you, or easier because it's so close?
Both. But I think that when I'm writing those moments that intersect, they never feel like my moments. It feels a lot like talking to somebody who went through something similar, right? So it doesn't seem like it's my life or the thing that happened to me. It seems like, oh, you have a sick father too? Like, what was it like for you? And it seems really like sharing kind of this moment in her life that I have a particular sympathy for, a particular interest in.
And did you do research on, well, the cancer research, I guess, came from just living the life, but research on the Korean treatments?
Well, that I just knew, because stomach cancer is actually a cancer that many Koreans and actually Japanese and Indian people get. And so the best places to get treated for it are actually Korea, Japan, and I think just Korea and Japan.
And how about the way people respond in Korea, the way the I don't want to call her the evil aunt, but, yeah, she's kind of the evil aunt, responds to her brother getting sick.
Oh, that was completely made up. Everyone in my father's family and actually just, you know, all our friends and family were so like, humblingly good to us during that time. But I also know just from my own experience that it's so tremendously important, the kindness of others when you're going through such a difficult period. And so I took this sort of novelistic liberty of imagining what would it be like to have somebody very close to you who, instead of making things easier, actually makes things more difficult.
Did your father go back to Korea?
He did go back to Korea for treatment very briefly.
Was he buried here or there?
He was buried there.
Catherine Chung, both your parents are very educated. Your father was a professor?
Yes.
And mother's a librarian with a PhD. That means you grew up in a world of literature and of the arts to some degree, you think?
Yeah, I think that's true. And in the world of ideas more than anything else.
You majored in mathematics and then switched to creative writing. And you said that writing and math are both about learning to make sense of the world. So there's that correlation there. And I kept thinking, yeah, but writing is about ambiguity, and math is about the lack of ambiguity.
Oh, see, I don't know. I feel like writing is searching for clarity within sort of like the endlessly ambiguous. I don't think that we write to be ambiguous. I feel like we write to shed some kind of clarity on the state of ambiguity. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, but it's about, writing seems to me, and talking to people, it's about asking questions. It's not really about finding answers.
Oh, but I think in a lot of ways, math is also about asking questions and then trying to figure out the way to answer them or the way to think about them. I think the way that I approached math is almost exactly the way that I approach writing, probably because we can never really get away from ourselves.
So at some point in the process, I guess when the book was finished and it was going through its first revisions, you lost the manuscript?
Yeah, I was very tired. And I had the manuscript, the entire marked up manuscript in a bag. And I was waiting for the subway. And I got up and I got in on the train. And as the doors were closing, I realized that I had left my manuscript on the bench. And I could see it actually from the door as the doors were closing. And then off went the train. And I rushed back and it was gone. And I lost my mind briefly. And then I looked for it everywhere. And when I was looking through the trash, a girl approached me and said, "Excuse me, are you looking for a manuscript?" She had saved it. And so she is my Facebook friend now. I owe her for the rest of my life.
So this was just a manuscript that had been sent out and had revisions and was coming back to you. So that's why.
No. This was my manuscript. I hand edit. So I don't edit on the computer. So I had printed out the entire manuscript, and then I had edited it, and I had just finished. I had actually carried it with me because I was going to make a photocopy, and then I didn't have time and left it on the subway station bench. When I edit, I told you earlier, I throw out thousands of pages, and so that manuscript, you know, I had crossed out entire pages and written pages on the backs. I had, you know, it was all marked up. It was completely different.
So that would have set you back quite a ways.
I think I would have just given up on life. I might have recovered. But at the moment when I was looking for the book, I thought, oh, it's all over.
Catherine Chung, at what point did you approach an agent?
I approached an agent after I had a draft. Maybe it was my third or fourth draft. I waited until I had a draft that I thought could sort of stand on its own and was pretty much what it wanted to be. And then it took me many months of searching, and finally I found the right person.
And did the book sell quickly?
Yeah, actually. I feel like finding the agent was the hardest part after the writing of it. The writing of it was the hardest part. But then after I found the right agent, it went out and sold, I think, in a week and a half. But, you know, I had thought it would take so much longer that it was more astonishing than anything else, and I was in the middle of moving. I feel like every time something happens in my life, I'm in the middle of moving. So, but it was awesome and such a relief and really exciting.
Well, when you were writing it, the process of writing itself always fascinates me. And I ask these kind of questions to different writers, like, what did you learn about yourself that you didn't know just through the writing process?
That's a very good question. I learned that I was more persistent than I had imagined. I learned discipline, actually. That's less learning something about yourself, but I learned I was capable of discipline. I learned actually a lot of not wonderful things about myself, I think. I learned actually in the writing of this book that I am afraid of facing certain truths. I wrote and I wrote and I wrote, and I felt like I was trying to figure out what I was writing about, like I said earlier. And for me, you know, I had this character, Janie, who's really hard to sort of get to know. And she is trying to avoid all these truths about herself, that she's sort of maybe not as good of a daughter as she thinks she is. Maybe she's a little controlling. And I think what was immensely humbling was that Janie was a character that I didn't actually necessarily have a great deal of sympathy for when I was writing her. And I ended up learning, I guess, in spite of myself, the ways in which I am like her.
Well, finding her voice, was that easy or hard, or did that just seem to be there from the beginning?
Her voice was there from the beginning, but the thing about her voice is that it is an elusive voice. It's hard to sort of catch hold of, even though it's there.
And the character of Hannah, the sister, it seemed to me that as the writing commenced, that particular character, if any character, kind of took on a life of her own.
You know, it's funny because when I started writing, Hannah was the character that I felt sort of closest to. She was the character that I thought that I understood the most. I think as I kept writing, the more I realized she was also elusive to me, but in different ways.
So at the beginning, you kind of knew that even though Janie was writing it and Hannah was the one that had abandoned her family, that Hannah was the one who made more sense to you.
Yeah, or Hannah was the one I was also more interested in. She was the one who was doing things she wanted to do. She was the one who was like going off in search of whatever it was that she wanted, no matter what the cost to everybody else. And so it's a fun storyline to follow.
Had you ever given any thought to making her the point of view character?
No, because I have kind of always thought that the point of view character is not always the most interesting character. Maybe I've just always thought that it's more interesting to look at somebody who's doing something interesting rather than to have the person who is doing the interesting thing also narrate.
Catherine Chung, having written a book about Korea and having grown up in a Korean household and having been to South Korea, do you have any insight into what's happening over there now, particularly with North Korea, or is that for you still a blank spot as much as it is for the rest of us?
I think it is actually a blank spot, probably about as much as it is for everyone. I have, you know, my hopes for Korea, but even how realistic they are, I don't know.
And when you hear about North Korea being the axis of evil, what does that do for you? I mean, people don't necessarily separate the fact that there are Koreans who are from a completely different country.
Oh, I mean, but I think that they do. I think when people say North Korea, there's a pretty clear distinction between North Korea and South Korea. But, you know, the thing with the axis of evil is that I don't know that I ever believe in the axis of evil. It just is so absurd to me. It makes me very sad what's going on in North Korea. It just seems tragic that there are so many people there suffering the way that they are.
When you're going back there, this talk about possible nuclear missiles being aimed at Seoul. So there's something always going on there, even beyond the separation.
Yeah, you know, I think that it sort of makes the news, and then but people don't think anything will really happen, and they just move on. You know, it's not the kind of thing that you can be freaked out about all of the time. But, you know, I also remember going to a talk right out of college about North Korea and South Korea. And there were all these U.S. military people talking about the situation. And I remember them saying that it had always sort of been America's policy, because, you know, there's a giant military presence there of U.S. soldiers. I remember hearing and thinking about what they said, which was that the U.S. preferred South Korea not to think about North Korea, that it was, you know, like our preference that they let us handle that. And I remember thinking, like, I wonder if that's why, I mean, I wonder if that is part of the reason why South Koreans, you know, don't think about it as much, because there's been active encouragement.
Not to
think about it, yeah. This talk was actually around the time when America was deciding to withdraw its troops to south of Seoul, to no longer be between Seoul and North Korea.
Catherine Chung, I understand you're working on a second novel about a female mathematician.
It's not exactly about the female mathematician. She's not the protagonist, but she is the center of many things that happens.
Is she Korean-American?
No, she's German.
So you're moving completely away from Korea in this one.
You know, I think that there might be like one Korean person in there who will probably also not be the protagonist, but might have something to do with the plot.
Well, when you're working on this, is the process similar to Forgotten Country, like this huge mass of stuff that you somehow have to feel your way through?
You know, it's early days, so I can't say this with a great deal of conviction, but no, I think that this process is going to be very different. And I think maybe part of the reason is that Forgotten Country was my first novel. And with this novel, I feel like I have, even from the beginning, just kind of a sense of what the plot will be and who the main players are going to be. And so I'm hoping that it means that I will finish it more quickly.
What is the Birdsong Collective?
The Birdsong Collective is a group of writers and artists in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, who get together and they put out a zine and they give readings and they put up shows for their art. Tommy Pico is the one who leads the Birdsong Collective, and Jess Papps is one of the musicians who sings. She's got a wonderful voice. I don't know that anyone has, like, you know, broken out yet that we heard of, but they're really wonderful. And when I was working on this novel, they were incredibly encouraging, are somehow in a sideways way responsible for a lot of the things that have happened for me.
And you're on the board of Paris Press. What's that?
Paris Press is a nonprofit press that's dedicated to publishing works by female authors who have been neglected by, you know, the mainstream publishing houses. And they're wonderful. They put out a book by Virginia Woolf on being ill. They put out a lot of Ruth Stone's collections of poetry.
You've been listening to an interview with Catherine Chung, whose novel is titled Forgotten Country. I'm Richard Walensky on Cover to Cover.